on this program and on the Shabbat program on Friday evenings on Blog Talk Radio, Yada Yada Radio, we have delineated the five insights associated with 7-4. And so I will not go over all of them again, but I do want to mention two of them. The first of all, for God to say that he looked out of the window of his home and he saw the whore and the feeble-minded with her, along with the young man, the lowly and little one of deficient character, screams one thing that is extraordinarily important and seldom understood. It may be the most important insight that I could provide for anyone, or that God could provide for anyone regarding religion. And it's right here in your face, and I don't think there's one person in a million that sees it. What do you think that might be, fellas?
Well, it's obviously that, you know, well, I mean, I just see Babylon right there, and I see Paul leading the way, and God's warned you. He's shaking.
If God says, I look through the window of my home, which is the covenant, in heaven, and I saw right outside.
Oh, you mean so close to, in close proximity?
Right, yeah, the whore. The whore of religion, and the feeble-minded along with her, what does that mean about religion?
It means that it has to attach to and be a counterfeit of in order to sell it.
Right. That Satan doesn't promote religion the way people think. That, you know, that he has occultic, sadistic seances, and that he wants to be worshipped in a satanic cult fashion.
No.
He doesn't want to be worshipped as Satan. He doesn't even want to be known as Satan. He hates the Satan title. He wants to be worshipped as God. There's only one God. He knows it. And so every one of his lies, every one of his distortions is piled right next to the truth. It's a counterfeit. It's a twisting. And by doing that, he fools people into believing that Satan is God. They even call him by name, Lord.
Mm-hmm.
That's Satan's name.
Yes.
And so, in Allah, you know, in the Quran, Allah spends all of his time in hell.
Yes.
He's interested in torturing. That's what he's spending his time doing, torturing people in hell. His only guaranteed admittance into his brothel, which is a place of drunken orgies, where virgins are routinely ravaged, is so demonic, so twisted, that it's obvious that the God of Islam, Allah, is Satan.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, 1.2 billion people prostrate themselves to Satan as if he were God.
5 times a day.
Yes. And one of the passages I translated yesterday, God said, I am opposed to, and it's translated the oaks of Bashan. God's got nothing against an oak. And no one even knows what a Bashan is in the terms of a location. And what it really says, I'm opposed to, the Hebrew word for oak is Allah. I'm opposed to Allah, and Bashan means because he's a serpent, the snake, because he's satanic.
He slithers, sneaks upon.
Oh, man, he's venomous, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So God's really clear about this, folks. Satan pretends to be God. Christianity gained its credibility and appeal by placing its lies right on top of the truth. Their Good Friday replaces Passover.
Yeah.
Their Easter replaces Bukurim. Their Sunday replaces the Shabbat. That every aspect of it, their Jesus replaces Yosha, which is Yahweh saving us. Their New Testament replaces the covenant. It's just, it is a subtle twist and counterfeit that is designed to make satanic worship appear credible. You know, the sacrificial lamb does give up its life on Passover for immortality.
Right.
But that doesn't mean God dies.
No. God is gone.
Oh, my goodness, folks.
Yoshi already said, why you left me?
Yeah. Why are you... What's the problem with thinking here? But that's the nature of religion. That's what God is saying, is that the horror of religion, particularly as the horror religion is depicted as Christianity, looks right outside of the covenant. But it is absolutely outside. You know, we've talked about this before. You're an artist. If you were to devote yourself to making a nearly perfect $100 bill, what is that bill worth?
It's nothing unless I can pass it.
And if you get caught with it, it will cost you your freedom.
No, you have to be.
It's a liability. It can be 99.999% the same, and it's still a liability.
Yes.
Well, Christianity is not anywhere close to 99.9% similar.
But they couldn't sell it if they couldn't piggyback on the Torah.
That is correct. It is conceived to be a counterfeit.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bogus bill.
And that's what Esau is. That's what the word means.
Yes. Exactly.
I mean, he uses all the right words. You look up all the words, and they say exactly what you're saying. It's not made up. We're not stretching anything. I'm not twisting anything to make it fit. You know, this is, yeah, it's real clear.
Yep. Then he says, passing in the street, beside her corner. This is that one who lacks character, the lowly and little one. He strides. Walking is part of a growing group along the path of her house. Now, was there anything walking that would be distinct about Paul, the founder of the Christian religion?
He was big on journeys. You know,
he was.
Place to place to place to place, spreading his gospel.
Yeah, that was the whole book of Acts is about the long walk Paul took through the Gentile world. In fact, he claimed the Gentiles all for himself, and his missionary journeys define him.
Mm-hmm. You know, speaking of the journey, the pathway, the journey that he's taken is also written the same way. It means to trod down, to tread upon with intent to harm.
Yeah.
I mean, my God.
Yeah, and what is, you know what Yahweh actually says about the beast that grows out of the Roman Empire, the Roman Catholic Church, when he is critical of them, do you know what his criticism is? He says they tread upon the whole earth.
Mm-hmm. The whole world.
Tread upon.
Right.
Step upon.
Huh?
You know,
right.
Yahweh wants us to be able to step up. To stand up.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the worst thing is to step on somebody, to prevent them from being able to stand up.
Mm-hmm.
And he says Roman Catholicism, it treads upon the whole world. And here, this person whom he will introduce as Sheol, Paul, is treading upon the world. Holding them down because he's precluding them from knowing God. And it's, of course, these strides. Walking is part of a growing group. Sa'ad travels in her direction while pursuing her mission and goals. You know, we talked about this now on two different occasions. But Paul specifically, in two of his letters, says that he took people to Satan.
Oh, yes.
He in one letter he says, "I want you to take them to Satan," speaking of his believers.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, "I've judged him already, but you take him to Satan. Satan will save him." Yeah, Satan will save him. And then another one he says, "I've already taken them to Satan."
Yeah, well, you know where he is.
Yeah, of course.
Got it.
And then another letter he says that Satan has possessed him. that the goad, the thorn in his side, is a demon from Satan.
I guess the preachers forgot to bring that part up.
Yeah.
Yes, he's so stupid.
Just before the dark of night, depicting the twilight of one's conscience and the fading of their soul. As the light fades after sundown at the end of the day, at the pupil of night, there is total darkness and doom. When behold, a woman approaches to issue an invitation to meet him, outfitted in the garments of a prostitute, a harlot and whore. And she is crafty and concealed, underhanded and evil, of heart, character, of motives, and of judgment. So now what we're talking about is the whore, which God says, if you have any question about this, read Revelation 17, 18, and 19. I read it last night on our Shabbat program. The whore is Roman Catholicism. The whore is the Babylonian religion as is manifest in Christianity. And so we have here, in the dark of night, a place where there is no light, as the soul begins to fade, the light diminishing after sundown, the pupil night, the darkest part of night.
Let me toss one thing in on pupil.
Uh-huh.
One of the definitions of Vishon is the middle of the eye, the pupil, black, darkest part,
mm-hmm.
on and on and on, charring from afar, deep black. It also means the little man of the eye.
Back to Paul.
I'm stretching a little bit, but that's what the lexicons say, so I just write them down.
Yeah, my.
When
behold, a woman approaches dressed as a whore. What she's saying here is that when Paul was on this journey, remember, walking in the streets on the road to Damascus,
yes,
that the whore, Satan, appeared to him. And she approached outfitted in the garments of a whore, but crafty, concealed, underhanded. Which means that she didn't say, "Hey, Shaul, I'm the whore of Babylon. Shaul, I am Satan. I'm the adversary." And, you know, we both have an issue with God. And we don't like God's creation, mankind, very much either. You know, you were drummed out of rabbinical school. Your father sent you off away from home because he didn't like your sorry tail either. So we got an issue with man, and we both have an issue with God. So I'm Satan, and so why don't we team up? I'll make you one of the most famous people in all of human history. You can be the founder of a religion, and we'll work together. That's not how Satan approached him, was it?
No, he was cunning. That's far.
Right. Did Satan approach Chawa? There's no Eve. Chawa in the garden by saying, did he slither in as a snake and say, "Better watch out for my bite"? I am the adversary. I'm the one he's been warning you about.
No, that was the exit, not the entrance. The entrance
that is
it was grand.
Came in grand, beautiful. Came in quoting God, twisting what he had to say, just like Paul. The ploy that Satan used in the garden against Chawa is the exact one he deployed again with Paul. Quote what God says, take it out of context, truncate it, twist it, and then take people to a place that's the opposite of what God actually said. Exactly what he did with Chawa. It's exactly what he did through Paul. It's exactly what he did through Muhammad. He's a one-trick pony.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'd think. And you'd think you'd figure out that as many times as Yahweh has told us that Satan is beautiful, he tells us throughout the Proverbs, throughout the Psalms, throughout the prophets, that Satan is beautiful, elegant, dramatic, grandiose. That people would drop the stupidity of thinking that Satan is this horny dude with a pointy tail.
Yeah.
He's not. He's light. He's gorgeous.
Well, he blinded Paul so he couldn't see anything else.
That's right. You know, Yahusha gave sight to the blind.
Mm-hmm. He took it away.
Satan blinded the sighted.
Yeah.
Paul couldn't even walk anywhere. He was brought to the ground. Yahweh made the lame walk. Satan the other way around.
Think this through.
Yeah, think this through, folks.
These ain't the hard ones.
No, these aren't the hard ones. And so, what God just said is, she's crafty. She's concealed. Now, if you're Satan, and you were and you were in fact concealed and crafty, mm-hmm. would you appear to people as Satan?
Hardly.
Hardly. What do you think the word concealed means?
Yeah.
if you have a weapon to carry a concealed permanent weapon, mm-hmm. is your gun front and center on your chest, painted in day glow orange, yeah. and says gun on the front of it? It's concealed, folks. Satan is concealed and crafty, underhanded. In other words, he tries to appear the opposite of what he is. He is the adversary to Yahweh. By the way, adversary to Yahweh, it is true he's the adversary. And he is in opposition to Yahweh, and Yahweh is opposed to him. They aren't... This isn't a Joe Frazier and Muhammad Ali.
No. There's no comparison here.
We're talking here Kirk and the Garden Slug.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, and the Garden Slug's already shriveled up for being too long in the hot sun.
Too long in the hot sun.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, that's what we're talking about here. But the point is that people have been beguiled by religion to think that Satan is this ugly caricature, when in fact he's so beautiful that he is actually the grandiose God of religion. He's the Lord. In Christianity, he is Allah in Islam. He is man, of course, in secular humanism. So, there you go. Now, by the way, it also says that he is underhanded and evil of heart, character, motives, and judgment. One of the things that was interesting as I was reading the prophecy in Yeshaya about the last days and the dealings that the elite of the world, the most powerful merchants, the most powerful politicians and religious clerics, that they will all galvanize and gain their authority on behest of the whore, on behest of the religion and Satan. And yet they will immediately turn against Satan.
Yeah.
And Satan will turn against them. Because just because, you know, here Satan made Paul all sorts of promises. I'm going to make you the most famous guy in the world. And Paul did become most famous, probably the single most influential person of all time.
Hard to dispute that.
Because it's certainly not Yahusha that's the most influential, because there aren't one person in a million that actually knows who he is, what he said, and what he did. But Paul, I'd say, is easily the most influential person of all time. Muhammad probably the second.
Fair enough.
But both died miserable.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Paul, you read Paul's last words to his to Timothy, and he says, everyone is abandoning. He's in absolute agony as a human being. It's the nature of align yourself with a untrustworthy individual.
Well, I mean, think of the Roman emperors.
Ooh, they were all miserable.
The big ones that we were talking about the other day. I mean,
yeah,
had horrible deaths.
Yeah, horrible deaths in those cases. Yeah, but there were even more miserable lives.
Mm-hmm. Well, they're always watching over their shoulder.
Yeah, I thought that was so interesting, though, in Revelation. There's this line that just, I don't think anyone has ever figured out. It's so enormously simple that it gives you the timeline for all of these things. And it talks about the timing of Paul's letters and of this beast that is a satanic envoy, a demon. You know, and it says that five have fallen, one is, and one will come. And will be for a little while, and then it talks about an eighth that is in league with and one of the original seven, and you look at Yahweh Kahnon wrote this in 68 CE, during the very year later that same year is when Rome would invade the province of Yehuda and destroy the temple. In 70, but they invaded in 68. And so it's obvious that they hadn't invaded yet, or he would have mentioned it in Revelation, because it was such a major, major event in Jerusalem and Israel. And so he wrote it in 68. And you look at, all right, he's speaking of the city on seven hills being the ground zero for this whore. And this whore of religion that influences the world so negatively and also becomes the one that inspires the Torahless one known as the Antichrist. And the city on seven hills is Rome. And you look at Yahweh using the term there as a beast. And he says five were. One is and one will come and will be for a little while. And you look at the Imperial Rome.
Mm-hmm.
Up to that point, there had been exactly five Caesars.
Mm-hmm.
And you can delineate them all off as when they died. And there was a sect that was currently ruling, a really despicable guy named Nero.
Mm-hmm.
He would die the following year. He's the one that was but will not be. And then the one who came, Vespasian. Oh, did he come all right? He's the one that led the legions into Israel. He was on the throne for 10 years. And then you look at the eighth that is one of the seven, and I would say that next to Paul, the second most despised man in all of human history would be Hadrian.
Yeah.
Another Roman emperor. He led the second conquest against the province of Yehuda, but far worse. He wanted to name Jerusalem after himself. And wanted to build a temple to himself right on the Temple Mount. So, you know, you've got some real idiots there. But it also spoke of this demonic spirit having been but is no more, and it had just left Paul. The young man lacking judgment here with the following as he walks around the world. The world of the Gentiles at the time.
Mm-hmm.
He had just died the previous year. You know, you put the pieces together. It's all there for you. And so it says, she is disturbingly loud, creating a confusing commotion. And she is openly defiant and rebellious. Paul described three different times, and he has a different account all three times of what happened on the road to Damascus. But the voice was always loud.
Mm-hmm.
And since he couldn't even recall what the voice said, and has a different account, it was obviously confusing. And the fact is that the voice on the third occasion cited the most famous line from Dionysus, it's difficult to kick against the goad.
Goad, uh-huh.
That's funny. Paul got that line right. Never got a single line from Yosha.
Never gets
correct.
Yosha.
Not one.
No.
But he got all he got Dionysus.
Pretty bad for a rabbi. Yeah. One out of 100 million.
Yeah, he got Dionysus that one right. I mean, you couldn't be more confusing than that message. Even Paul was confused by what he said, and it was loud. It was so loud that everybody fell to the ground. Whether there was nobody there or two other people there or no witnesses or some witnesses, or they all fell or nobody fell, or they all saw it, nobody saw it, they all heard it, nobody heard it. Yeah, he doesn't quite know. Kind of like his journey to the seventh heaven, where he said, I don't know if I was there in body or spirit, but only God knows. Sounds like Allah in the Quran.
Well, juxtapose this to Paul. The passages we've been reading are divided up, of course, arbitrarily, so we can find them. And but Yah's used in the last passage. He used what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5? He's used 7 words, and now he's using 5 words to convey all these thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
English, by comparison, we have to use a ton of words to explain what all he's saying, because we don't get all of that right immediately. And Paul, you can't understand nothing. I mean.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, she is disturbingly loud, creating a confusing commotion.
Yeah.
That's actually one word, because the preposition for she is affixed to hama, which is the verb. So that's one word, and to convey its meaning, she is disturbingly loud, creating a confusing commotion. She is uproariously raging in a riotous snarl, flashy and flamboyant, a gaudy and garish, vulgar and angry drunkard. Greatly desiring and yearning for stormy turmoil, furious hullabaloo, while soliciting great wealth, associated with hoon, which means to easily confuse, to distract, to dislocate, and to destroy. It's exactly what happened on the road to Damascus.
Right.
And even worse, when he said, you know, he claimed on all 3 occasions that this voice said, you know, why are you persecuting me? Now, the fact is that Paul could no more persecute God than I could.
No.
And so it is impossible that God would say, why are you persecuting me? He didn't even ask the Romans that. And they crucified him.
That's true.
When Satan was trying to torment him in the 40 days and 40 nights prior to his ministry, he didn't even ask Satan, why are you persecuting me? When he was sent to Sheol on matzah to perfect us, and we have a full accounting of what happened there, we never once hear, why are you persecuting me?
Yeah.
When the rabbinical types and the liberal political types were trying to trip him up, he never asked them, why are you persecuting me? When Shimon Kefesh, Peter, said, you know, we ought not go back into Jerusalem, even to celebrate Passover, because of, you know, they are, they want to persecute you. Those are the facts. And he says, get behind me, Satan.
Yeah.
And what he didn't say, no, you're right, they want to persecute me. I don't want to be persecuted. That sounds really bad. No. So we're going. Don't you understand? We're going. Yosha would never say that. And so, even as you and I share this message, and people are critical of it, we don't ever say, why are you persecuting us?
No,
I never
thought of that. No,
never even dawn on you to think that way. And so here's a guy that is claiming, and even citing that line, you know, it's difficult to kick against the goat, means it's difficult for you to rebel
against me,
against religion.
Yeah.
Against religion.
Yeah.
It's Dionysus' voice. That's the popular religion of the Greeks was based upon the dying and resurrected son of the sun, Dionysus. The Jesus of Christianity is based on Dionysus. Easter, based on Dionysus. Christmas, based on Dionysus.